Welcome everyone, I'm your host Greg McEwen, and I am on this journey with you to learn, to be able to apply less but better into every aspect of our lives, so that overall we can achieve more without burning out, so that we can operate at a higher point of contribution, but to do it in an effortless way. And speaking of less, remember the Less But Better course that you can take completely for free, designed thoughtfully, curated for you. You just go to gregmcewen.com. It's on the homepage. It takes you 10 seconds to sign up. You'll get a high quality workbook plus a 30-day email course helping you not just to understand these ideas in general, but to be able to put them into action immediately. Where do you start on this journey of higher contribution? That's what the Less But Better course is all about. This is part two of my conversation with Lydie Klotz, who's a professor and also the author of Subtraction. One of the things I loved about part one, and we continue this in today's episode, is how much research Lydie has at his fingertips to be able to not just make these statements that we have learned by experience to be true, but also to have the data to back it up, to encourage us on this journey, this disciplined pursuit of less. Let's get to it. I think this is an important insight into the subject of subtraction and simplification more generally that there is. It's that you have to start by subtracting. It's simplification first. Mm-hmm. It's start with zero. It's not let's see if we can just tweak at the end. That is a form of simplification, and it's a very important kind. But there's this other more monumental shift in the mindset where you're looking at the world with a lens of simplification, where you're suspect and suspicious of adding. And that doesn't mean you never add, but you just always put it through that gate first, question the requirements first, just because something is being sold to you, right? We have been sold the benefits of every kind of technology for the last, I mean, I don't know, you could say since the Industrial Revolution, but I mean digital technology over the last something like 30 years. And with every technological innovation, there are people incentivized to sell that additional thing to you, that additional complexity, and that this is better. And yeah, that CDs are better than vinyl. And well, cassettes were better than the vinyls, and then CDs were better than, and then Apple iTunes was better, and then Apple Music is better. And I'm like, no, I'm done with this now. I mean, of course, everyone now loves vinyl again, but I think maybe it will happen for the other technologies too, because I don't prefer these new technological systems. But my real point is that we're oversold constantly on the value of more, newer, you know, all of this is better. And if we don't have a heightened sensitivity to it right from the beginning, then we just sign up for a whole lifestyle that, to be honest, I am increasingly frustrated with. So the segue here is, in a world that does have all this data coming at us constantly at our fingertips and our phones endlessly with us, those constraints that come with it, like, what can people do listening to this? They're successful, they're driven, they're capable people. They're probably still running out of space, still pursuing too many things. But how can they operationalize practically subtraction their life?
Yeah, I think starting with subtraction is great. I think, and it sounds so simple, but the reason it's really important, the order. Because, you know, where did we start from, which was we don't even think about subtraction, right? That's a problem that we need to address. Mm-hmm. If you have a rule to start with subtraction, you've immediately fixed that mm-hmm. problem. You've immediately helped with thinking about it. And it also helps with the competence, right? Like this desire to show that you're competent. So imagine if you could have a company that where like the ethos is to take things away. And I know, I mean, there are companies that are working towards this. Then the person is showing competence by taking things away. If you've got this rule or this practice to start with subtraction. So I think, you know, if there's one thing I would just, but the order is really important. You know, even things like start, stop, continue, right? People will say, oh, that's an example of subtraction. It's like, yeah, but you've thought about the things you should start before you've gone down to the things that actually matter, right? You should subtract first because you might not want to add the same things, or maybe you don't even need to add them at all after you subtract. So starting with it is amazing. I think that would be the number one go-to for people.
So let's stay with that rule because I like that and that's enough for us to riff on, but like let's talk, and perhaps it's a brainstorming with us, but practical things people can do to subtract first. I just talked to somebody the other day who had a rule that he would eliminate, like get rid of 10 items every Saturday.
Oh, that's awesome.
Into his model. I thought that was a very nice, you know, tangible, achievable thing.
Yeah. I don't want to be too prescriptive, but I think people can take these examples and adopt them to their own life. I think the common theme in them, though, is that sit down after listening to this podcast or even while you're listening to this podcast and say, what are my key decision points in life? Where are the times when I'm making decisions that matter? And then how can I build subtracting first into that routine? So you just gave the example of people taking a guy taking 10 things away every Saturday. That's perfect, right? I'm gonna every Saturday take 10 things away. When you're doing your to-do list for the week, right? How can you force yourself to have an equal amount or even more stop doings and start with those stop doings? That's another example.
So something I have found very helpful for that is to have a single master said no to list.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
you
so
keep that- it?
Yes. And so, yeah. And so I'm a fan of paper and pen planning. I still have it. Like I literally have it in front of me because I bring it with me almost everywhere I go. And so I have like a page in here, and every time I say no, or certainly every time I say no to something that's at all major, you know, medium to major, I write it down. And I do it for two reasons. One, because then it allows me to evaluate it later. I can look at it and say, okay, you said no to that. You probably should have said yes to it. You know, so you learn from that decision-making process. But also I do it to an empowering tool because you see you can say no. And so such novices at it still that I find it encouraging in that way.
Well, I'd also say that I have a friend who does this with when she says no to things and she puts a block on her, she uses digital, but she puts a block on her Google Calendar. And what it does for her is when she's writing, which is kind of her highest value activity, she's reminded of the fact that, hey, this writing time is brought to you by saying no to this other task, right? So it's
really cool. I love that idea that when you say no to it, you actually block it. And you say, see, I was going to do this, but now I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
I really like that.
We talked about legislation. I'd be remiss if I didn't. There's a like two in or one in, two out rule that I think you could think about how it applies in other places too, right? So if somebody wants to propose a new piece of legislation or just, you know, a new rule in your organization or some new thing that, you know, my academic department is going to do, then say, okay, well, what are the two things that we're already doing that we should discuss not doing, right? And you lump them together so that, and it's just for discussion. You don't have to definitely get rid of them. But now when we're discussing adding something, we're discussing what we can stop doing to make space for it, which I think that's a really kind of elegant way to make it part of your practice.
I'm absolutely thrilled that Harvard Business Review is sponsoring this episode because I go to hbr.org really frequently. I mean, literally just yesterday, looking up an article called Relearning the Art of Asking Questions because I'm researching questions right now. And one of the things that I have found is that when we're very little, age 2 to 5, we ask questions incessantly, as much as 200 to 300 questions a day. And not surprisingly, the amount that we learn in that period of time is exceptional. It reduces significantly as we go to school, where suddenly we're incentivized to come up with the right answers rather than to continue developing the ability to ask the right questions. This is just one way in which I've been able to utilize HBR.org recently. So while much of Harvard Business Review's content is available for free after signing up at their site, subscriptions to unlimited content start at only $10 a month. Go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter the promo code Greg right now to get 10% off your subscription. Again, to save 10% off your HBR subscription, go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter promo code Greg. This episode is sponsored by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. So whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point of sale system, whenever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. So sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify Magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. In my experience with every business that I have built, including this podcast, there are breakthrough moments, and those moments are often the result of finding the right partner. And I think that's a way to think about Shopify, because no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Greg, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Greg now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Greg. I have rarely seen people do this. That doesn't mean that it's a bad suggestion, and I wasn't implying that. Something I have actually seen work. Again, I'm not suggesting yours doesn't. I haven't seen people successful.
No, it's funny because as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, "Yeah, like it sounds so simple, but you know, I haven't implemented it in my work. I do it in my life." But
yeah, no, yeah. It's not. Of course,
maybe that's the next research project. Yeah, why is that so hard to implement?
For sure, that's an interesting piece of research. Now, the something I have actually seen an organization that got really serious about asking this question with transformative results was somebody that said they introduced this question: what do you have to say no to say yes to this request from me?
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah, that's great.
So what they did they had this hypothesis that said, I mean, this is like a real sort of a research, real-time experiment. They said, well, look, if essentialism is true, then we ought to be able to achieve more with less inputs, you know, the same or more outputs with less inputs. And so the tangible challenge they said is, okay, what if we move to a 4-day work week? Could we still have the same output? And they did it for 3 months. They wrote all, you know, they've written up their results in multiple places. And they were able to do it. They increased productivity by 20%. They moved officially to a 4-day work week. And it was this, you know, this cool case study. But that was the thing that they primarily changed, was the introduction of that conversation. Because it's not like other conversations. In fact, I felt ridiculous when I first learned about this, because I didn't realize that nobody was having that conversation. I thought people weren't having that conversation enough. But what I learned was it's not even happening. So we all know and have regularly conversations about addition. Yeah, that's just an email. Hey, can you do this? Well, now it got added. Okay, now I did it, or I ask you another question and we move forward. So we are very practiced in the art of having additional conversations, but novices at conversations about subtraction conversations. And so that question to me seemed to be poignant and really effective for them.
Yeah, I like the conversation framing. I mean, it's one of those things where you say rules, it's really like the two in, two out, one in rule. It's like really easy to envision that because it's very concrete. But the conversations are a little more like kind of, yeah, it's just you're hoping that happens, that there's not like necessarily a perfect script for it. But I think you're right. I think that, you know, that's how ideas spread, right? Not by dictate, but by people talking about them. And it brings to mind an example. Like one of my friends is Melanie Frank. She's a vice president at Capital One. And her example of doing this was just talking. She manages software teams and she just asks them, like, what do I need to help you stop doing, right? What do I need to help take off your plate so that you can be effective at the things that you want to do? And it's a conversation. It's not some policy or, you know, it's just, but you could imagine, yeah, and then those conversations spread, right? If I, now she said it to me, I said it to you. And, you know, I'm sure everybody that she says that to then thinks about saying it to the people that are working for them. So I think that, you know, just that it's also something strikes me about that you're giving permission to somebody else to do it, which is kind of an interesting take on it, right? You're making subtraction the option to do this. You're being generous about it, which is kind of nice. So,
and this idea that, well, the idea that subtraction in practice includes interaction with others, I think is a really necessary shift, because at least in my work with Essentialism and Effortless, I find that people immediately have this question, and that is, well, how, I mean, they're really always asking, well, how do I do it in the real world? But what they mean by it primarily is, how do I do it in the world of people? So even if they say, well, I know what my priority is today, or I know what my priority this week is, and it's like, yeah, but then you're going to hit into the reality of people, and they, even in the best case scenario, they'll know their priority, and that won't necessarily be the same as yours. So even if they're personally clear, you're going to, and then of course in reality they have 50 different things and their hair's on fire and they're in a whirlwind and you probably are too, and so the reality of the noise and complexity of it, that comes while interacting with people, I think any solution on these themes that doesn't include this is a necessary but insufficient level of solution. We have to find ways to be able to work together with others in simplifying those things that are either just simply too complex, too costly, or just non-essential in the first place. What other interpersonal skills have you come across?
Well, I think that permission one, I haven't necessarily, I think the permission and the conversation, like one thing that it strikes me as, one reason people wouldn't subtract, right? If I think about in my department, for example, you go to a department meeting and like when I first came here, you know, there's things that look like they're ridiculous and you're like, why are we doing this? But you'd feel like a jerk to question it, right? It's really obnoxious because you don't understand how everything works yet. And most likely, like the thing that you're questioning, somebody may have some tie to. So you end up not even having the conversation. And I think that might be why the permission works, right? Because the conversation, it helps with that challenge. And that's like, that's not a situation where the person, where you're like trying to just hold on to your fiefdoms. You're trying to help everything be better, but you don't want to do it because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. And by inviting the conversation, now you're not hurting people's feelings. You're just talking about it. So I think that can be helpful in getting over it in the real world. I really think that, you know, at the level of these kind of cultural like mindsets, right? You're shifting people's mindsets towards subtracting being okay.
Well, it just is bringing to mind this sort of, it's helpful to start with an ideal case, and it's hard to get better, I think, than Jony Ive and Steve Jobs and what they've allowed us to be privy to about those conversations. So they were meeting pretty much every day for lunch for 10 years so that they could talk, exploring, you know, the what's the one thing. And of course, Jobs is famous for this idea of we've got to say no to a, you know, a thousand things, to say yes to one thing, right? Like, we've all heard that idea, but a mutual friend of ours, Jeremy Utley, it was when he and I were talking on this podcast that we suddenly both realized, well, that is all about saying no. That's that quote. We all hear that. That's the part we all hear. But it's also about having a thousand things to say no to. So it's clearly there's a huge role for ideation in this. So that's okay. So coming into now this conversation that they would have, Jony Ive shared a question that Steve asked him frequently. And I think this goes right to the heart of giving people permission and creating a culture of subtraction. He would ask him, what have you said no to recently? And so Jony would say, well, you know, I said no to this or that. And Jobs would push back on him and say, well, you didn't even want to do those things. That's nothing. I mean, what have you said no to that hurt, that was hard to say no to, you know, that you really, really wanted to do, but you still said no to it. And I do think that that's a question that I'm going to, of course, come back to. I mean, it's inherent, I suppose, in essentialism and the spirit of being an essentialist, but it's one that I need to refresh and re-enthrone in my own life and in my own work. Like saying it to my team, saying it to my wife, asking her to say it to me, because I'm really guilty of this. What have we said no to recently? Let's really keep pushing ourselves so that there is space to breathe into the things that really matter. Give us the final word.
No, I think that fits into the conversation too. And now when you're talking about like making this a conversation, one organization I talked to, they built this into their annual reviews. And it was effectively just saying like, what are you going to stop doing this year? Right. And so now everybody's basically having that, the benefit of that lunchtime conversation where it's like, no, like, what is it? What are you going to do? How can you be more ambitious with that? So I think that's, you know, I just really like that framing of it. I think one last thing I would say is, you know, you mentioned till it hurts, right? And people will often ask, well, how do you know if you subtracted too much? And it's like, we so rarely subtract too much, right? It's like, it's not bad if you subtract something and realize that you want to add it back, right? It's like, that would be an indication that we're subtracting enough. Is that like, okay, yeah, we went down below and now we're like, oh no, we need to put that a piece of that back in. And the number of times that happens compared to the number of times that we're like, oh, we got just too much stuff here and we need to get rid of some things. It's no comparison.
Yeah. That's a problem that nobody has. Although contradicting that just a tiny moment is, you know, this is what Musk is going for. He says, I want to say no to so many things and eliminate so many things that I do think I did too many. No, like, mm-hmm. So now this is a controversial example in I suppose in a lot of ways, you know, or at least it's certainly been seen that way by lots of people. But when he takes over Twitter and eliminates an enormous amount of staff and inelegantly, I don't think anybody can disagree that it was done inelegantly, but this idea of like, at some point in that process, he goes, oh, okay, we kind of went too far on this. We need someone who does that again. We need somebody who does this. He certainly wanted to get to that point. Right. Wasn't trying not to get to that line. He wanted to get to it because then he knows what the line is. And he then goes, okay, yeah, we eliminated too much. We got rid of too many requirements. We said no to too many things. Okay, now we know. You don't get to that point, you simply do not know. And you're just guessing all the time in your life as to whether, you know, whether something is necessary. You know,
No, it's a good example. I mean, it's true. Like, that is exactly an example of what I just mentioned. I wonder if there's a way to do it without putting people's, I mean, even just from the organizational standpoint, there's obviously collateral damage to the, you know, reputation, people's desire to work there. So could you somehow do that without laying people off, right? You get down to where you think it's, you're close to the line, and then you just tell people, all right, everybody gets a vacation every Friday. We're going to see how much we really need here. I don't know. That's why I'm not running a big company.
No. I mean, sure. I mean, look, the Twitter example is challenging for people because there's political overtones involved, right? Yeah. And so, and not just even overtones, right? Like that there's, it's right at the heart of, you know, what people are allowed to say and not allowed to say and left versus right and so on. So that massively complicates our ability to see what the simple elimination of people did, because everything was seen through that bigger lens. And I'm not myself in favor of this kind of slashing efficiency consultants who come in, well, we'll just get rid of this and get rid of that. And I mean, to me, that's not essentialism. That's like noism or something, you know, or it, you know, that's, but the principle is still there. It doesn't mean you can't be also kind or also thoughtful, but nevertheless, the idea is you want to keep going until you see the pinch of it. Until you think, oh, it was a bit too much. We simplified a bit too much. You want to be on that side of it because, as we've already established, addition is the easy part. So, okay, you can add something back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like let's move it into the example of our everyday lives, right? And where the, like, if you simplify so much that now you've got an hour of free time that you don't know what to do with, that's a really easy problem to solve, right? Now you can pick up a new project. And, you know, so, yeah, but we don't, when has anybody ever been in that situation, right?
Yeah. And when did anyone ever describe it as a problem? My goodness, I have hour every day now. Yeah, what did I do? It's such a fun conversation to riff on with you, and I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you. Really. Thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Greg. I just, you know, really appreciate the ideas that you've put out into the world. I think of my job is creating and sharing ideas, and, you know, yours have been influential to me and so many people. And that's, you know, that's all we got. So thank you.
For everybody listening, what is one thing that you heard today that you can put into action? And by that, I mean, put into subtraction. You know, what's one thing that you can eliminate from your life, from the physical things around you? What's one idea that stands with you you can now implement to the benefit and simplification and subtraction so that you can learn to breathe again? What is one person that you can share this with? How can you continue this conversation now that this conversation has come to a close? Thank you. Really, thank you for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.